Hundreds of thousands more local students got back to class, including in Montgomery County, Arlington, and D.C. This time of year is normally filled with hope and optimism, but is now mixed with trepidation and anxiety as students head into the classroom after 18 months of remote learning. A recent national poll done by the University of Michigan found 1 in 3 teen girls and 1 in 5 teen boys have experienced new or worsening anxiety over the course of the pandemic. Earlier, I talked with Dr. William Stixrud and Ned Johnson, their co-authors of the new book, What Do You Say? How to Talk with Kids to Build Motivation, Stress Tolerance, and a Happy Home, about whether we fully understand the effect of COVID on our children's minds.
I think the long and the short of it is, one, we don't know yet, and two, there are enormous individual differences. So there are some kids who have really thrived under COVID because they've gotten more sleep, they have less social pressure, their, you know, school done at home for them is better. But there are also all these kids for whom not being in school, not seeing their friends, the loss of their regular activities and routines has been really, really hard. But I also wrote a piece for the Washington Post asking whether we might actually have a generation of kids who develop more resilience out of this process.
Well, I think that the book is timely in the sense that certainly there's many risk factors and many kind of natural disasters and things that have affected people. The psychological effects show up later. The thing that builds resilience, what we call in our book high stress tolerance, is dealing successfully with stressful situations with support. And what our book's about, Dimitri, trying to give parents the tools to really stay connected and communicate well with their kids. Ned and I have both seen a lot of kids who have done pretty well in this pandemic despite these challenges. Many of these kids have a lot of advantages. There's a lot of introverted kids who find it very stressful to be in school 6 hours a day and are happy to be home on Zoom. It's a mixed bag, but I do think that we're going to have to really pay attention to these multiple risk factors that have affected so many kids.
I also, Ned, want to preface this question. This is not a veiled effort to discourage mask wearing in school. I have been hearing some discussion that child development may be delayed or otherwise hurt when especially young children cannot see the bottom half of each other's faces. They can't see a smile or a frown or another expression. Do you have any thoughts about that, how to improve communication when our faces are covered in this way?
I think anything that gets in the way of effective communication should concern us. Certainly, you know, for the last decade anyway, the ubiquitous use of the smartphone has really impeded our communication. So it seems to me that if we've sort of proverbially got tied behind our back with these masks, we should really be intentional about other things that foster better communication. So let's, for goodness sakes, try to, when we're talking with people, set down our digital devices and give them our full attention, specifically for little guys who are still learning to read faces and trying to put together words and actions and body language. I think all of us grown-ups can really help foster that process by being very intentional when we're communicating with kids to give them our full attention, at the very least, so they can see our eyes. So when they crinkle, they'll know we're smiling, even if they can't see our mouths.
Children learn to read faces, but by reading faces. On the other hand, many children have siblings, people have developed pods that they play in, and finding pods of kids to be together is really important. But the ability to read faces is deeply wired. And I think that the idea that kids don't have as much opportunity as they had pre-COVID, that doesn't mean that we'll have a generation of kids who are very deficient at it.
You mentioned those digital devices. Because of screen time, because of these devices, is raising a child in this era so much different than in 1995 or 1975?
There's just no question. The digital technology has hugely affected the landscape for children and their parents. There's just some new papers that were published recently on the escalation of anxiety, depression, and strikingly loneliness in young people that maybe it probably is attributable, at least in part, to social media and the fact that kids do so much of their communication not face-to-face, whereas we evolved to interact with each other face-to-face. We have a chapter in our book about talking with kids about technology and about sleep, because they're the two things that we tend to get most pushback on.
I mean, anything that increases the pace of life, anything that fragments our attention is harder. Certainly, we love the work of Gene Twenge, who has the smartphone ruined a generation. And we just have real concern when our attention goes in a bunch of different directions. And the current model of technology is to grab and hold our attention. And that's fine so long as it's for things that really help us. But if it's taking our attention away from friends, sleep, type activities that are more deeply engaging, we have to be concerned about this. And, you know, to your point, these were temptations that all of us as parents didn't face when we were kids. So when we interact with our kids, we want to be really respectful, knowing that we never had to face this, but we ought to be awfully sympathetic and empathetic to our kids who are struggling with them now.
How do you connect?
Two of the keys to connecting with kids at virtually any age are empathy and validation. Empathy meaning, I'm trying to understand that this is really hurtful to you, or you're really mad about that. Where some of the language that we can use, it involves letting kids know, I think I understand what you're saying. I'm trying to get what you're feeling. And the validation part is that a lot of people would feel like that. I'd be angry too if somebody did that to me, where it's normal and it's for kids to feel what they feel. That's one of the really profound ways that we can connect with our kids at virtually any age. And if we treat them respectfully, if we treat even younger kids, if we don't try to boss them around all the time, we try to treat them respectfully, we want to know their point of view, that there's ways that we can maintain a really healthy communication with our kids, even if they go through puberty and that they go through that developmental change, where they may not be as interested in our lectures as they were when they were younger.
It's certainly the case that kids today, because they're so overly stimulated, they become bored more easily. And there's a lot of literature on this, of just these patterns that we want to pay attention to. So one thing would be, if you're an older person talking to a younger person, maybe talk more in short bursts. So it's a little bit more back and forth rather than longer lectures, lest you lose kids' attention. The real interesting point of our book, being ineffective in our communication with our kids. If we're a parent and we don't communicate effectively, it's super stressful because our wisdom, our advice goes unheeded. And so as much as we like kids to meet us where we are, we will be more effective if we understand where they're coming from. And part of that is just being empathetic to the fact that, you know, they're living in a different world. And before we want to give them a hard time, it's probably a good idea for us to remind ourselves that our children are living in the world that we created for them.
There's an idea that Ned and I talk about in this book and in our first book, The Self-Driven Child, about parents thinking about themselves more as the kids get older, as a consultant to their kid, rather than the kid's boss or manager. And this idea has the implications of, for example, not trying to force our advice, not trying to force our help on kids, but offering it. It involves really encouraging kids to make their own decisions, and it involves helping kids as much as possible solve their own problems, because that's what builds that confidence that you can handle hard things.
Dr. William Stixrud and Ned Johnson, they have co-written the new book, What Do You Say? How to Talk with Kids to Build Motivation, Stress Tolerance, and a Happy Home.